Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Oh, what I just realized in this piece here is going to make you laugh, Mike Bastic. It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Fourth and final hour, Will Chambers in today. Appreciate you letting me ride with you here with Alec Medford back in the Pimp Cup and Carter Freeman handling the video on YouTube and Twitch. I tell you what, RJ, so Choppy texted me. You were saying, as we were talking about the NBA threes and the issues that they have with the game, or at least with some people like me that are critical of what it's at right now, that the mathematicians got involved and realized that, you know, if you shoot all threes, you shouldn't, like, you know, mathematically it doesn't matter, right? As far as you, if you shoot 37% from three, then you're going to beat everybody. RJ actually had the number 40% from three greater than 59.9% from two.
Right. And who's going to shoot 59% from two?
Somebody on a really good night.
Right.
Typically.
So, you know, it's just the math is, you know, mathematicians figured out the game of basketball. 37% isn't a high percentage. You get wide open three-pointers because you can't contest in the NBA anymore. You can travel. You can double dribble. You can carry. So it's just just shoot as many threes as you can. And if you hit 37%, it's the most efficient offense you can have.
Tomorrow on the program, we're definitely going to be doing a college football playoff game preview. We've got a little bit coming up next as far as what we have seen in some bowl games, including, you know, what we had from Cam Ward. That was a pretty controversial decision. But we start this hour with a piece out of The Athletic this morning. Which teams have the best front office in Big Four leagues? Execs vote on their peers. So what they did is they polled 40 executives and coaches in each of the four major leagues, MLB, NBA, NFL, and NHL, obviously. Oklahoma City Thunder, they have as the best front office in all of sport, at least with those four.
Yeah.
The Dallas Stars are number five on this list. And we were talking to the boss during the break, Gavin Spittle, a hockey hawk. Spits and Suds, where you find your podcast. He said, not surprised at all. I would say a little bit, only in the sense that
it hasn't ultimately led to a championship.
Yeah, and you've got some teams like Boston's been, I know, without a championship, but on a pretty good run. That ultimately is
the
where
Bruins.
You need to have one of those. But when we get down to it, what they have been able to put on the field, like, one of the lines in here, the Stars have picked higher than 12th just once in the past 10 years. And yet their lineup is filled with homegrown talent. The one high pick, that's, you know, Miro Heiskanen. They say might be the most underrated player in the league. Another aspect, they say here, of Jim Neal, you know, the GM, and the success that he in the front office has had is how he deals with his fellow executives. Class still goes a long way in this league. Everything they do is right and smart, one senior advisor said, and a lot is relationships because Jim may be the most respected GM in the league. So there you go. I wonder how much of this, well, I think this is easier to determine. Like, one of the things I hate is coach of the year in any league because it never goes to the best coach. Right?
It goes to the team that exceeded the most
expectations. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, they were supposed to be nothing and they were great. As it turns out, they, you know, they're the Braves of the 90s, right? It's just, but in 1991, and I have no idea if Bobby Cox had gotten manager of the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bill Belichick, did he ever win coach of the year?
I don't know.
Phil Jackson, I know, really, I don't think he ever did. And granted, he took a team to six titles that Doug Collins could not, others. But I think with the front office, it's based on if you're choosing number one each and every year, like the Browns did for a while, you should start to get pretty good, right?
You'd hope so.
You would think. But if you're not, like it's saying here, picked higher than 12th just once in the past 10 years, that's when you could say definitively, like, that is, they're doing more with less, right? With assets.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a fair way to look at it. The Rangers. Well, here, I'll give you the rest of the top five just for curiosity, right? You got the Thunder. Number two, the LA Dodgers. I feel that's about right.
And they just won the championship. Obviously, they have a S ton of money.
Okay, see, that goes completely opposite of what we're talking about with the Stars, right? Because you're having to get through talent. I mean, yes, you can spend, but you've got a salary cap. To me...
They did trade for Mookie Betts, but if you look at it, they signed Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
They signed Freddie Freeman. They signed Yamamoto. I mean, I know he wasn't the major contributor for the championship, but like, if you look at the Dodgers, they have done it. They've developed. I'm not saying they haven't developed, but they've done it more through financial means.
Right.
And they have had a good front office. I do love their front office, but they do have an advantage.
That's high for me considering all that.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that I used to say about the Yankees a long time ago was, well, they spend. And I was like, yeah, but the first chunk of those championships was all homegrown. You know, Jeter, Bernie, Jorge, Rivera, Pettit, you know, all those guys.
Yeah.
And then they spent, you know.
Right.
Number three is the Baltimore Ravens. I would have put them ahead of the Dodgers, but whatever. Then the Tampa Bay Rays, the number two baseball team. See, this is more where I go, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. They don't
very
have...
limited budget, can't keep their own players. In fact, in the last 2 years, they lost their future Hall of Famer that was going to change the game in Wander Franco.
Yeah.
Like, that was the one guy that signed a long-term contract, and then he did what he did. And
they've had to do everything via the draft.
Yeah.
I like the first line here. No roof, no problem.
It's going to be a problem,
yeah, no,
because
no
there's going to be a lot of rain delays and a lot of rainouts next year for them.
So the Rangers make the appearance at number 34, and that is the eighth team in baseball.
I do think that's fair, because if you do look at, I know that they've changed. Obviously, Chris Young has taken over from John Daniels. If you look at from 2017 to 2024, they've had one winning season. It did win the championship. It did win the World Series, and I will take that. But and they've done some good things, but I think trying to rank them as, like, let's say a top five front office in Major League Baseball, I do have to consider what has happened from 2017 to 2024, and then that Chris Young hasn't been in the front office that long.
Okay, so, and that's the question that I would have. It's really not said in here. As far as what are they taking into consideration? Mm-hmm. Are they taking into consideration the group that's in there right now and the job that they did over the last year or the last couple of years? Or are we talking a front office over the course at an organization for the last 10 years?
I'd say the last, to me, and I have no clue what they're doing, but I'd say let's look at the last 5 years. Anything past 5 years ago, I don't want to put too much consideration into.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you...
Like, how much credit? I know you haven't gotten to the Mavericks, but...
None. The Mavericks are like tied drafting, for 52nd.
Which I don't think is
fair. The Cowboys are ahead of them.
Which is crazy.
I didn't get to how many NFL teams were in front of...
Since Nico has taken over, for the most part...
Right.
They've made a conference finals and an NBA finals. Two out of the 3 years, they've been in the final four, and one of those years, they did make it to the final two.
I was laughing as we started out this hour in this segment because I had just, as the red light came on, had gotten to the count of where the Cowboys were in regards to the NFL, right? They're tied for 48th overall, over all four sports, but they're the 14th best front office.
So they have a lot of football teams in there, right?
Uh-huh. Guess the team that is immediately in front of them.
Dallas Cowboys.
This is polling from 40 executives and coaches in each of the four major leagues. So, the Cleveland Browns are ahead of the Cowboys. If that doesn't make you laugh or cry, I don't know what to tell you. The Cleveland Browns, who, how many number one overall picks How many top five picks did they have over the course of the last 15 years? An immense amount. And they have still sucked. They've made like two playoff appearances. I'm not sure they've won one game. And they also gave the worst contract in the history of contracts in sport to Deshaun Watson. To the point that every other owner in the NFL hates Jimmy Haslam for. I think that's his name. I know it's Haslam. But for doing that, for giving them the whole, you know, guaranteed deal, they're ahead of the Cowboys. That is a smack in the face.
I will say I think the Cowboys should be ahead of Cleveland.
Yeah, no, I do too. But the fact that these people polled had them behind him shows you that not a ton of respect there.
Wondering what Cleveland has done. I mean, I know Myles Garrett. That was a while ago. That was the 17 draft or whatever. So I'm trying to figure out.
I'll have
out,
that right here in a moment.
Like, why has Cleveland, what has Cleveland done?
And they
be,
didn't have a write-up in here.
And how are they better than the Dallas Mavericks recently?
Right.
The Mavericks. I know. It was because my son was asking me this. And I said, it is weird because they made the conference finals, didn't make the playoffs, and then made the NBA finals. Those are the last 3 years of the Mavericks. In fact, you could argue...
You could argue it's the best front office in the NBA.
It's better than the Rangers.
Yeah.
Like the Rangers won the World Series, I get it, but the last 3 years, it is under 500, win the World Series, under 500.
I totally understand having the Thunder where they are because they're all young, they're all really good, they seem to be on the ascent, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But when you consider the moves that have been made by the Mavericks, and also the moves off of them, like with Grant Williams last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one where you just have to go, nope, didn't work.
Made a mistake and hurry up.
Yeah.
And they changed it in a positive way.
Totally.
Why would Oklahoma City, to you, be rated ahead of the Boston Celtics? The Boston Celtics were the Oklahoma City Thunder 5-6 years ago with the drafting of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and having all these extra picks. And we get it. Took a while. They had to change their head coach multiple times for different reasons, and Brad Stevens is in their front office. Why wouldn't Boston be number one
overall?
All right,
I'm not going to be able to come up with a good argument for that. I could see it with the Thunder, but yeah.
They accomplished the ultimate goal. The Thunder, it's like, yeah, the potential is amazing, and it looks like they might be reaching their potential, but Oklahoma City hasn't reached the potential that Boston reached.
This is funny. It's one thing to be crowned the winner, this coming from The Athletic, of this inaugural front office competition, but this was a landslide victory for Sam Presti and his staff. Huh.
I mean, I know they've done a lot of good things. They're very Boston Celtic-like, except they haven't reached the goal of the Boston Celtics.
I guess maybe the fact that they're saying building those Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook teams with James Harden early on.
Holy cow, they're going back to 08-09?
No, I think that they're taking into consideration that with now what they have, having lost all those.
Like trading those guys, getting all those picks. I mean, obviously the Paul George one is the best one. They got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and 5 first-round picks.
Yeah, they're saying, okay, so to answer a question on how far back they're looking, at least 5 years, because they're saying the July 2019 trade with the LA Clippers that brought in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 5 first-round picks and 2 first-round swaps in exchange for Paul George. Yeah, that's...
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm not
saying I'm with you.
The Mavericks shouldn't be better, but now we have to include Luka. Has there been a better player drafted in the last 6 years, right? Because we go to 2018 to 2024.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a better player drafted in the NBA than Luka, and the Mavericks had to trade up to do it. The Mavericks had to go from number 5 to number 3 to figure out how to do it. So they did make a trade to get, arguably, over the last 6 years, if you're just taking the draft picks from 2018 to 2023, the best player in the NBA. He's not the best player in the NBA, but Jokic and Giannis don't compete there because they were drafted before that.
Yeah, I would not put the Mavericks ahead of those two teams, but I put them in the conversation because of what Nico has done. Look, when you think about where the Mavericks have been, prognosticated, picked in the beginning of the season, where do they think they were going to be? I'm pretty sure nobody had him in the Western Conference Finals a few years ago or in the NBA Finals or anywhere close to it.
Yeah.
And they got to those spots and they continue to compete at the upper echelon of the Western Conference with making these moves and these draft picks. So
the other thing, too, is, you look at Luka's 25 and I look at Daniel Gafford's 26 and Quentin Grimes is 24 and Jaden Hardy's 22 and Derek Lively's 20 and Najee Marshall's 26. Prosper doesn't do much, but he is 22. PJ Washington is 26.
Yeah.
These are their ages. Like, I know a lot of people look at Oklahoma City's young and upcoming, and they are. I get you have Kyrie at 32. The Mavericks are young. They're really young. I don't think people understand. I just want to keep making this point as much as possible on the radio, how young the Dallas Mavericks are. They're not as young as Oklahoma City Thunder, and I think Oklahoma City Thunder, I want to say, have three of the top 15 picks in this upcoming draft, by the way, because of their trades.
I seem to have forgotten that we don't do an expressway in the 1 o'clock hour, too. So I haven't looked at the clock in a minute, and that shows exactly why. All right, wait until I give you a little bit of this Cleveland Browns draft stuff coming up, but we'll get into some college football next year on The Fan. Going to get into some college football here in the KNC Masterpiece. On this Monday, December the 30th, as we're creeping up towards New Year's. Happy holidays, everybody. Will Chambers in today with Mike Bassick, Alec Medford back in the cup. Carter Freeman's coordinate your video on YouTube and Twitch. As we're getting close to talking with the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan.
During the break, I just had to call my guys at Men's Tea Clinic because I'm coming in today. Getting that tea today. You know what I'm talking about, Will?
Oh, I know it. I know it. My visit there in so many ways may have saved a lot of health issues over the course of the next 5 years for me. So I'm very thankful for them. All right, we were just talking about the list The Athletic had given on which team in all four major pro sports who has the best front offices. And the Dallas Cowboys were tied for 48th. Which in all four sports, okay, is what it is. They're the number 14th NFL team. And to my surprise, Cleveland Browns were ahead of them because I'm like, oh my God, that's incredible. Because they haven't done anything. They have been to the playoffs twice since 2003.
Heck yeah.
And they've lost both of those games. From 2010 to 2020, they have six top 10 picks. Six. They haven't, you know, they're
Baker Mayfield.
They're 3-13 this year. And then they gave the worst contract in the history of sports to Deshaun Watson. I don't know how they're not dead bottom.
And what did they say about the Cowboys?
They didn't. There's only in the piece, the top 10, they wrote about all of them. And then they would give the list.
Oh, and just like maybe a sentence or two?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, they would like from 11 to 21, they would list them. And then they're just like a couple of paragraphs mentioning maybe three teams. So that's why.
Okay.
Because I'd love to hear
like
what the thoughts were on the Cleveland Browns. Huh? Goodness gracious. All right. Some big controversy over the weekend, Michael, from Miami quarterback Cam Ward.
College.
He,
you know, we met his I can't remember, his cousin came to one of the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, no kidding.
Gave us some cupcakes.
Cam Ward's cousin came in to give you some cupcakes, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Love there it. Were they any good?
They're really good, actually, yeah.
I'm trying to pull it up here while I'm like kind of, you know, just talking. All right, Iowa State. That's right, the Pop-Tarts Bowl. So he only played in the first half in order for him to get the passing touchdown record. Career passing touchdowns, he passed the aforementioned Case Keenum. How many times has Case Keenum come up twice in a radio show here in the last 5 years? Can't be much.
So, like, NCAA all time?
Yeah.
I thought you were maybe talking about a Miami record.
No.
So all time, Ward has the most touchdown passes in the history of NCAA football?
That's right.
I would have never guessed that.
All right. How big of a deal is that?
It sounds like a big deal.
Yeah. That's where
I mean, this sounds like something to be very...
Because he sat out the second half.
Like College Football Hall of Fame. I'm in the College Football Hall of Fame. I have the most touchdown passes ever.
But he's going to get there anyway. Okay, here, I'll just give you my standpoint of it.
All right.
My initial thought, because he sat out the second half. Miami had built a huge lead. He had three touchdowns on the first half. He breaks the record. You know, they've got a lead of, at the end of the second quarter, 31-28. And they eventually lose 42-41. And It sounds really selfish and self-serving. At least that was my initial thought of it. But I appreciate the, you know, the question, because I heard a lot out there on Twitter, people just like, are people really mad about this? Like, why would they be mad? I'm like, what do you mean, why would they be mad? Of course, you know, you got your start, your quarterback of a team that decided he wanted to get his record and then get out. That seems a little selfish. And then I thought about it another way. Saquon Barkley is going for the NFL record for rushing yards in a season. One that's been held since 1984?
Yeah.
Okay, Eric Dickerson. Eagles have, they've wrapped up the playoffs. They've wrapped up the division. And I'm not positive. Can they get, they're the two.
I don't know this because did Minnesota and Philadelphia play each other? Is there a tiebreaker there? Because if, let's say, Detroit loses tonight, and then Detroit beats Minnesota next week or this upcoming week, and Philadelphia wins, could they be the one seed? I don't know all the tiebreakers.
Okay, let me... No, it's got Philadelphia in there, and I think that they are locked in.
Okay. I'm like...
But let's just say that they are, regardless. They're not playing for anything. Saquon Barkley gets the record... Philadelphia goes for it to get the record. He gets it and then sits out the rest of the game. None, he wouldn't get slammed for that.
No.
So is it the same thing?
So if Cam Ward had no way to get a record, he wouldn't have played at all?
Yeah. He's in there like selfishly just to get a record.
Has NIL caused players to play in these games because part of their NIL is that you'll play in the bowl game?
That's a good question, one of which I don't know the answer to, but we all know that it's, you know, opting in. I thought had Shedeur Sanders not played, and we knew it was going to because Deion said as much, right, after their final regular season game, like, oh, no, they're going to play, he and Travis Hunter. Had he said, you know, I'm going to just, you know, focus on the draft, which we all accept, right? Like, you know, cool. But he didn't. He decided to play. Would Cam Ward, because he doesn't want Shedeur playing and throwing up big numbers and having a huge game and having that be the lasting image of him, maybe solidifying the number one pick. And maybe that's why Cam Ward played. Forgetting, of course, that he was actually going for that record. So my initial thought of it's selfish and blah, 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 I kind of softened off of that whole thing because the bowl games do not matter.
I have no clue that Miami even played in a game. You are giving me all this new information.
This is news to you.
I don't care at all.
Yeah.
About they just showed some fart knocker games coming on, the Fart Knocker Bowl and Fart Knocker USA.
Right.
I don't care.
I don't either about the bowl games.
I do care about the playoff games.
Exactly. And 903 says Barkley has playoffs. Cam's Miami career was over. So that's another argument, you know, for that with Cam.
The one thing that it doesn't matter now is Miami, I don't know their situation, but I feel like 99% of the time it used to be, well, his career's over. He doesn't want to get hurt. He wants to go in the draft. And we can give our sophomore quarterback, who's going to be our starting quarterback next year, we can give him this whole bowl game. It's almost like getting ready for spring practice. But that's not the case anymore because I feel like Miami's quarterback is going to be Syracuse's quarterback. And Syracuse's quarterback is going to be Abilene Christian's quarterback. And like it's just all this musical chairs. Like next year, there's not going to be a quarterback. I guess Arch Manning is going to be the rare case where he signs with a school and kind of stays with that school and develops at that school. Is every year it's going to be a new quarterback. Whoever quarterbacked NC State is going to be the quarterback at some better school next year because Duke's quarterback was the quarterback at Notre Dame. And so now there's not even a development. It used to be through colleges that this bowl game that meant absolutely nothing would be a development for your spring practice to get ready for spring. But now your quarterback's not going to be the quarterback that's there already. He's probably not happy that he was the backup quarterback, so he's transferring out. So I don't even know what these games are for.
I mean, I thought, okay, so he's going for the record. What does that give you? But who am I to sit here? Who am I to sit here and be like, you haven't had a chance to go for a record?
If I could have the most strikeouts or the most wins as a pitcher in NCAA history, I want that record.
Yeah.
If I have an opportunity to get it, if there's a game or two left and I can possibly get that record for most strikeouts ever, in NCAA history or most wins ever in NCAA history, I'm going for that record. I want that record.
My initial thought...
I have no clue who holds it.
Yeah, my thought was just like, even without playing in that bowl game, you're still looked at as one of the best quarterbacks ever in college history because of the numbers that you put up. That record's going to be broken, and when it does, you're still going to be considered that. You're still going to the Hall of Fame. You know, like, just what's the point of playing in it? But again, I said, okay, put yourself in that human being's shoes and then look at it from that perspective. Adam in Arlington chiming in. This is pretty good. Were you aware Texas is the only team that has the ability to be four conference champs in the playoffs? So beating the champ from the ACC in Clemson, the Big 12 in Arizona State, and then if they move on, the Big 10 and ultimately the SEC. Now that would be if Georgia gets there.
Notre Dame's beaten Georgia.
But it wouldn't, yeah, or Penn State, yeah, has the potential to do that. Wow. Okay, that would be interesting.
Let me ask you this. I know they brought this up, but tomorrow, and we'll talk about it more tomorrow, but tomorrow is Penn State, Boise State. 6:30 p.m., I believe, is that game, or 7 p.m. I'm excited. Our New Year's Eve plans are usually eat an early dinner. We sound like an 80-year-old couple, but we're not. We don't go out on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I don't know what your plans are.
I am, because I haven't done it, I think, in like,
but
I mean, the better part of a decade.
I'm pumped up about Penn State, Boise State. I hope it's not as pathetic as all the games I ended up watching in the first round of the playoffs, and I get it. I was happy that there was playoffs. It stunk that all the games stunk. I'm happy, though, with the – it just ended up this first year of it is all really crappy games to start off. The Texas-Clemson game was somewhat competitive.
Yeah.
But the other ones
– it was more exciting.
At halftime, we all knew who the winners were, and it was over. So
– well, it's really difficult to win.
I am excited, and I'm hoping that it's a competitive game tomorrow night.
Yeah. Look, when we're looking at these games independently of a college football playoff – you know how hard it is to win at the Shoe? You know how hard it is to win at Beaver Stadium? You know, down in Austin at DKR? I mean, these are tough places to go in and win. And up against, you know, really good teams. Like, this is what is going to likely be somewhat of the case. Now, we're getting more and more parity across college football because of exactly what you were just talking about. But, you know, we have it, so to speak, outside of just, you know, the Super Bowl champions in the NFL. And the wild card is still, they were blowouts last year, you know.
Yeah.
I think almost every game, if not every game, was settled by more than 14 points.
Yeah. By the way, I haven't been on the radio since SMU lost. I mean, I'm happy that SMU got a chance. Unfortunately, SMU, you're going to have to win the conference championship for the rest of your life, because that performance was, we're never letting you in as a little school. I know you're in a big conference, but you don't get in unless you make it to the championship game of your conference and win, because that was miserable.
I had not considered that.
I hate it, but that's miserable.
Like, you're absolutely right.
And SMU probably screwed over a lot of the other little private schools if they end up kind of having a year where, like, well, their schedule wasn't great, but they only lost one game and it was close, and they were really close in the championship game. You screwed over everybody that's an SMU small school. You're going to have to win your conference championship.
It's an unfortunate byproduct.
Alabama now is like, we wouldn't have looked that crappy.
Right.
And we don't know, but probably they wouldn't look that crappy.
And it's not, yeah, you're right on that. They couldn't meet the moment. But and that's where I have big time pushback when it comes to Alabama still did not deserve to be there, because SMU, you know, played poorly, or really just Kevin Jennings. The defense, you know, was kind of, you know, tough at least early, but they eventually, the game just snowballed out of control. And that's where I worry, you know, moving forward with that, because then if it's not Clemson or Miami, then SMU, maybe with one loss, doesn't get in, and a three-loss SEC team gets in there. And I'm an SEC guy.
Yeah.
But to me, what you do on the field has to matter. It has to matter. Just because you have a better
bit
of talent.
Aren't the people right that if SMU would have played Alabama's schedule, they would have lost five or six games? Now that SMU get totally destroyed.
Yeah.
That now we look at it and go, look, I'm happy SMU got in. I'm rooting for SMU next year. I'm not like an SMU alum or anything like that. I'm rooting for TCU and SMU and Texas and A&M. I want all the Texas schools to make it. So I'm not against SMU. But SMU crapped the bed so bad that they really not only screwed over their chances in the future to be an at-large, they probably screwed over a lot of the little private schools.
Here's where I'll say,
because I would rather Alabama be in. I would have rather now gone, gosh, I wish I would have had the opportunity to watch Alabama play Penn State.
You're absolutely right. SMU plays Alabama's schedule. They probably have four or five losses. But you still, your play on the field has to matter. And Alabama lost to Oklahoma. They did not lose, you know, those other games. And Carter wants to get in here. I knew right when he got up and walked through, I was like, I bet Carter wants in on this.
You got your minute.
The only thing I want to say is we saw Tennessee play an SEC schedule, go 10-2. Yeah. And get boat raced by Ohio State. I think that should have ended any conversation about, oh, Alabama should have been in over that. And you get down to the 11th, 12th, 13th best teams in the country, they're all going to have warts. And Alabama played an SEC schedule. Well, they lost three games.
Like, by the way, Texas's schedule, you know, that's very favorable for them, too. I mean, we can talk about resumes, and Texas's isn't all that great, despite the fact that they are a great team.
Do you think, real quick, Carter, since you're in here, and we'll talk tomorrow. I want you to join the show tomorrow when we really get into this. Well, I didn't know you're coming in here. Do you feel like, real quick, do you feel like these four games are going to be competitive games?
I think the Rose Bowl absolutely will be. I have questions about the Fiesta Bowl. I think Boise State is a really, really good team, but if they'd played SMU, I think it would have been a closer game. What Penn State showed me is that they're going to probably beat Boise State by 10 points, if not more. And I think the way the SMU lost...
Are you talking about my cowboy Aston Jeanty like that?
I am. I think he'll have a good game because he hasn't had a bad game this year, but the rest of the team... Penn State's looked really good over the last couple games. I think they're going to win that game fairly handily. The Peach Bowl, I still think Texas is a lot better than Arizona State, so I don't know if that one's going to be close, but both the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, I think, are going to be really, really fun, entertaining games. So
we'll talk
at least
about
two out of four.
Yeah, I'll say, because we're going to break. Yeah, two are going to be competitive.
Jake Plummer and Darren Woodson, let's go.
Two are going to be competitive. Two are not. I'll save till tomorrow which ones they are. We'll talk to G-Bag next here on The Fan. Great thanks to Stephen Jones and Mickey Spagnola for joining us earlier, as well as to the great work, as always, Alec Medford and Carter Freeman. It's the KNC Masterpiece. One final time here on this Monday with Mike Bassick. I'm Will Chambers as we now crosstalk with the G-Bag Nation, consisting of Brian Broaddus and Eric Chiafalo. Thanks to our good friends at D&M Leasing. Happy holidays, gentlemen.
Yes, happy holidays.
Yes, you too, sir.
Great to see you guys. Will Chambers, we awarded you Teammate of the Week, crowned you champion.
Oh, thank you.
Last week. On Christmas Eve, he came into a little college football power hour with us. How about that, Mike? Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive. And
excuse to talk about it, I'll do.
What really put Will over the top was a Fan After Dark call-in on Friday night as well. So I think we heard Will Chambers' voice every single day over the holiday break.
You know what? I'm a whore for attention. What can I say?
Well, you're a man with takes, you know, and you got to find a microphone somehow. I mean, mm-hmm. Broaddus is talking into a microphone 26, 27 hours a day.
He is a part of more media.
I get on YouTube a lot. Brian, I feel like you have so many YouTubes.
Three shows.
Yeah.
Three shows I do.
I love
the platforms, the various. You have to remember what you're saying on some of them.
Oh, see,
you know, what you're not.
Well, no, you don't want to. You're trying to get your audience and trying to. It's funny. Every show has kind of a different audience.
Yeah.
So you got to remember what you said to one audience to say to the other. But no, it's been this podcasting stuff to me is fascinating. You know, the fact that you can generate a lot of looks just doing a 30 to 45 minute show.
Mm-hmm.
I think of people's attention span, and here I am talking about, please listen to us for 5 hours today. But I think of people's attention span is really about 45 minutes, you know, when it comes to listening to us.
I know it's a little bit different, but the same as Will talked about, this was just too much NFL football this week. Because they played Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, that it was just like it started feeling, I said, I bet it started feeling like an NBA schedule or a Major League Baseball
but
schedule.
After Bengals and Broncos, I was like, can't do it. I don't even know which show or movie I threw on, but I couldn't watch Rams Cardinals. And it's not like they're not exciting teams to watch. I was just maxed.
Yeah, you were footballed out.
Yeah.
You left it all on the field that day.
I did.
And it's late in the season. It's late in the season.
I'm 45 now.
The wear and tear is real after a long season of football and the way they crammed it all in. And they crammed in a bunch of the games ended up being bad. From Monday night last week, Christmas Day games, Thursday night
sucked. A lot of
tired
teams out there playing, trying to score, can't score, you know?
Isn't it weird that the two most important games for the final week, they're like, hey, let's give them one less day to get ready?
You know what? We meant to bring this up. It just popped in my head and talking about what you just said brought us. And the same thing there, like C.J. Stroud. I think he's got the yips. Remember Knobloch and Rick Ankiel with, you know, those issues?
Has that ever happened in quarterbacking play? That the dude's open and you just, you mentally can't get it there?
I'll tell you what, there was some plays yesterday that Cooper rushed mentally. Seriously, when I went and watched the tape this morning, and go ahead, I'm trying to think of players with yips, of quarterbacks.
Yeah, I've
yips.
Never heard of it or seen it, and it was just something just that popped in my head as I'm watching the game. Like, he's missing left, right, he's overthrown, he's throwing the dirt, like, on easy throws.
I was driving around, and I was listening to their game and it on the radio, and the announcer was like, oh, missed again, you know, and and I was thinking, man, is he really throwing the ball that bad? But yeah, then you get to a point in time where sometimes you just can't, you start like aiming the ball instead throwing the ball. You just aim it and you're hoping for the best.
It's a mental thing. I mean, it happens across different sports. I mean, anybody that plays golf goes through it for a period of time. You know, you got the shanks and you don't even know what you're doing, but you just can't get it right. Yeah. And it looked odd. Mm. Another thing that was odd, and you being a former front office person, executive yourself.
You got voted in last place? Is that what we did?
No. So this piece in The Athletic.
That's what
that
I'm saying.
Did
we get voted last? What?
They got behind the Cleveland Browns. That's the biggest thing to me where I'm like, oh my God, how is that even possible? The Cleveland Browns that had.
Oh, like, no, they've done. Yeah, you named all the things, the contracts and stuff, the misdraft picks and things. Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Jerry.
Okay.
They don't respect Jerry. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't, you know, they, and this is one of the times when I was talking to Jerry about this, when he got executive of the year. And I asked him, I said, hey, boss, is that pretty close to like winning a Super Bowl for you? And he looked at me, he goes, you know what, Brian, pretty damn close.
Yeah, I remember you talking about
pretty
this.
Pretty damn close. He goes, but he goes, yeah, you want to win Super Bowls, of course. But the fact that the peers and the writers and stuff voted me this award, he goes, it does mean something. So that's where, to me, I think Cleveland's organization is far worse than what Dallas has done.
Yes.
You could hate Jerry Jones in the front office all you want.
I could not agree more.
But there are times when they have got it right. I mean, there has been. I mean, it's not all the time, but they've got it right more than Cleveland's got it right.
We were talking about it earlier in the show, right? Like, I had issues coming into this year with the Cowboys in depth because these guys all left. They really didn't get replaced, all that. But for the years prior, particularly that offseason in which they got, I believe it was all the same, like Malik Hooker, Keanu Neal.
You said Curse earlier. Right?
Yeah, Curse. You know, these guys weren't, they're kind of bargain bin guys, but they all played big roles and they had a really good year.
Yeah, they had a year. They actually had to play a lot of young guys, and I mean young guys that aren't NFL established.
That might have been the year he won it, by the way.
Yeah. I just remember going up to him and congratulating him on it, and it meant a lot. I mean, he didn't think he was going to get something like this.
I think he won it in 2016.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones.
Okay. Garrett won Coach of the Year. Yeah, Garrett won Coach of the Year, too.
They had a fourth-round rookie.
Yeah, lead them to, you know, the playoffs.
And they drafted Zeke record. And all that, yeah. I thought it was an interesting conversation you guys had today about Zeke. When I was driving around, and you were talking about that if Zeke would have taken the healthier path, could that have made a difference? And could he be like what we saw
with
Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
Man, I think that's an interesting question. You don't know. Let's be honest. Zeke burned the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he was going in the front door a lot, you know, and so, you wonder if in fact let me be honest, Mike, in baseball, Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, 100%.
Mickey Mantle, that happened to Mickey Mantle.
Because he thought he was going to die because of his dad and grandfather.
He lived life like, by the bar light, and then go play baseball. And, it was one of the greatest baseball players. But you wonder about these players that that turn to that, where their lifestyle leads to them being out every single night and being, you know, and then going up and practicing it. It kind of gives you a little bit of like, wow, that's pretty impressive that they could have that much fun and play football
and still perform.
And still perform at a very, very high level.
It's just not sustainable.
No.
And it wasn't for him. It wasn't for him. And you wonder, did all that early partying affect the way he played? I thought it was a really good conversation you guys had today.
What do you guys have? Appreciate that. And thank you very much for the compliment for the week. I appreciate you guys.
We got to get a plaque or something here at the station.
We might give you a pretzel from the press box in Philly. Yeah. I got a couple. I've already eaten part of one.
But wish you would have brought me back a cheesesteak.
Yeah. I'm
sure that'd be delicious.
These pretzels are better than the cheesesteak.
What do you guys have coming up today?
Do you dip it in mustard or nacho cheese?
Beer cheese.
Okay.
But mustard is the only other option.
Yeah. I go with both. Yeah. I'll go back and forth.
Don't need mustard.
I like the back and forth on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pure Gold as always. Will Chambers, thanks so much for asking. We have Lucius back. So G-Bag of the Day, 2:30. LA Live, 5:40. We're going to get Krusty's Corner moving up at 3:20 today because we're going to get a McCarthy presser at 3:40. And then Jock Peterson, I believe, is going to be hanging around the G-Bag Nation sometime in the 4 o'clock today.
Oh, how about
sometime in the 4 o'clock today.
So we'll definitely be checking that out.
I'll tell you a question to maybe ask because I don't know.
Yeah.
When he goes to spring training, is he going to be using a first baseman's glove, an outfielder's glove? Last year, he literally played zero games in the field. He DH'd every time. So I'm like, but in spring training, you would practice a position, I think.
Okay. Maybe practice standing over next to us.
Maybe so. He could be like, no, I don't. I just take a bat to spring training. I don't even have a glove. Maybe that's. I don't know.
I love that. Okay. I'm writing it down.
All right. Awesome. There you go. You're going home with the G-Bag Nation. I will be back in tomorrow with Mike, and then the boys will be back hopefully feeling better after the new year. So catch us tomorrow, 10 to 2 here on 105.3 The Fan.